I'll reconvene the hearing. Commissioner Hudson, I suppose Mr. Ferguson, did you have some other matters to be brought in, or would you like to just answer them as we go through question and answer? It might be easier if we leave the question and then we'll do it. So if there's anything at the end that you want to add, then you can fill the gaps.
Fine.
Yes, Chairman. Just this morning, I recall there was a debate on the show through the chair about the village zone and whether non-compliance with the comprehensive development plan should be controlled or restricted discretionary. And I think, Mr. Ferguson, you are sort of clarification on what that actually means in practice. Now, I've given that some support. It's hard to sort of say it in words, so I was going to show you a diagram if I may. If you could approach the table, and also Ms. Jones probably should as well, so yes, you're aware of what's going on. I'd just like to illustrate with this example.
I think we look up the yellow and the spot if you want to approach as well.
I could see a question more than non-compliance with the structure plan, because there is less difficult.
No, this is.
Can you see that there and put it in there?
Okay, so it relates to if you have a comprehensive development plan and someone, you have a comprehensive development plan for that area, and we'll assume that might be the village, for example, and that is very crudely drawn. You might have on that comprehensive development plan show that might be a cycle of pedestrian access way. Mm-hmm. Somebody owns this block of land here,
right, yes,
and he submits that. He says, well, I'm not having a bar of that. I don't want people's traipsing through the middle of my development. There's my development. I want that. Now, you can't decline that proposal, but you could attempt to say, well, redesign it so that it has an access way in the middle. The potential problem, I think, that the chair and I see is that you get yourself into the situation where effectively you're defining consent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what bothers us about controlled activity status. Now, that's not a hypothetical example. In the last few years, I've encountered at least two examples of exactly that kind of situation from a property owner, where they just me first, hell with you, and then they're standing there with their hard-nosed lawyer saying, well, controlled activity, you can't decline it. That's the kind of example I was thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that sort of clarifies the question for you.
It does.
Thank you. They must be on the same area across the
question. Quite possibly.
So, to continue that, just to explore that further, I take it that to understand the conditions of the grant on that consent didn't extract anything from somebody coming along with a new consent or a control facility to replace the existing consent. Is that the problem?
Yes, well, that seems to be, and what the chair raised this morning, that seems to be that possibility is there. They could say, well, I checked everything around it. I'm not challenging that. I'm just interested in my piece of that thing.
Yeah, so the conditions that existed on the approved OP didn't provide that sufficient barrier to prevent that person from coming along and doing their own thing, their own OP, which was controlling to it and couldn't be declined. So it's through that alternative room they got there. The thoughts that sprung to mind were twofold in respect to this, and I'll deal with them in conceptual terms rather than perhaps just in actual law drafting, but I wonder whether or not where we could tackle it from would be from a standard-based approach, whereupon perhaps the first AP is dealt with in the manner that was described in the consent, and that any subsequent OP would have to be dealt with on a restricted discretionary basis or higher as necessary. That would become one standard that we like that could be developed. The second standard could relate to comprehensive development plans would be the existence of a duplicate replacement OP or comprehensive development plan. So So somebody came along with a second AP, the latest area, or replaced the initial AP, and that would trigger a requirement for a search and discretion AP consent. So that you can't have people come along with two things in the same area. Thank you.
Mr.
I'm just going to pose a question here because I haven't been sort of hearing you in the subdivision chapter, which I'm asking about. And as I recall, when I asked you if there was any difference in preparation and administration of a controlled activity and a restricted discretionary activity, as I recall, you said there was virtually no difference. There was anything down to whether consent had to be provided, had to be granted or not.
That's the key difference is the certainty of granting consent and granting consent.
Yes. So, is that difference in this instance so significant that we need two different rules? I mean, are we expecting, to Jack's point, that we're going to put in a comprehensive development plan that is so inadequate the council would have to turn it down?
Well, I couldn't see that happening. And that goes to the, I guess, the rule. So the rule has been constructed as a major trigger requirement for consent in that. The tackles of the comprehensive development plan as a matter of information that's required to be submitted. So if that information is not submitted, or not sufficiently submitted, then I guess the council have got the initial option of rejecting it as being complete, the application, and then following through the consecutive measures of then requesting further information to ensure that the decision has gone through without some control. And that's about as an equal rights information beyond the amount of control into assessing that as a note, you know, conceptually they don't follow it either. Through to the intervention of the conditions. So I think that within the initial framework of getting those up and going, I don't think there's a problem with controlling to the consent. But I think, you know, on the line of the issue that what the commission is pointing to is based on real experience. And I accept that and see the problem. And I think proactively you can deal with that problem through what I'm just suggesting.
Well, I'm just wondering in terms of plan efficiency, whether we need two rules or one. Given that the matters of discretion and the matters of control would be exactly the same, effectively, do you accept that what would be lodged by Jack's group, that point would be more than adequate, because otherwise you wouldn't recommend that it was controlled? So is it going to be problematic to have something different and restrictive discretion in the first instance?
Well, I wouldn't say problematic, but that's the existing problem. It's just an effective efficiency argument. And I can only draw on my own experiences and beyond the patients. There is an issue with somebody who is seems to be. They are working, the legislature is working perfectly well on the basis of the control of the WHA. And, in terms of what those issues are and how they can tackle at the moment, I see the current regime as relates to ODP, putting aside the wiring issues, which are counter-constructive, but they seem to be working on the current program. There's some inefficiencies that have been generated in terms of some of the residential activity areas around the entity master plans, which has been sort of information that is important to converting those ODP requirements in the residential areas. But in terms of the basic status of the civic open, there hasn't been any problems that have come across in my experience with the open that it seems to be.
Can I just chip in from a legal perspective?
the issue of scope is something that's quite relevant to this line of questioning, because as notified, the village was permitted. And the only submissions that sort of changed to that gives scope for something else other than secondary versions of the operative position, which is that it's controlled. So we have to bear that in mind as well in terms of where we can go and how far we can go on that.
Does that even enable
the
inclusion
of
the comprehensive
development plan? Yes, because the operative position is that
we know the operative position is
Yes, it's
occupied,
but the mechanics of it.
But you can't not provide it all as being within the scope, can you? Is that necessary? None of the other zones have that provision. It's usually packed up in the subdivision provisions. So, isn't it?
The issue that I had in mind with this was that, unlike the perhaps other zones, we have infrastructure in place and private infrastructure at that point. So, it's part of the controlling strategy, it's not the council. The ability to impose connections, safe conditions to require connections and instructions so that people just have internet, for example, and not connected to local instructions in place at that point. So the point of that servicing
stops any of those people existing lots shown there seeking a controlled activity subdivision or a further subdivision of the land?
Well, apart from any of the development covenants, then there wouldn't be any current implementation of the
Yeah.
No planning.
That's what I was wondering.
Reason. Well, that's right.
So it's reliant on the private covenants. Do the private covenants got further subdivision?
Depending on the nature of the covenant, obviously, because there is a straying out of the turning of the lift, but there is a consent notice that could be achieved through an agreement with the council. But ultimately, you rely on the lease provisions to control what happened in the area anyway. So if somebody was to create an allotment from an RSG with the expectation of wanting to build a house, for example, then that's going to be obviously outside of the construction angle.
Do any of the home sites, would any of the home sites actually be subdivided? Or would they be amalgamated, but would the creation of a lot incorporate the home site and some of the OSG?
That's exactly the situation that has happened. So
there is no, so in reality there's no subdivision of the home site.
That's the point I was getting at earlier, is that the home site's more within the area of the lot. The subdivision doesn't happen in the home site.
So maybe the answer is that there is no subdivision of the home site at all.
That's the practice, the past practice has been exactly that.
Because that would avoid that issue, because then the home site would remain identified. And any other subdivision would actually have to would be problematic because it wouldn't have a home site attached to it.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm
just trying to get a handle of this. In my experience of planning, I've learned not to trust people who buy pieces of land.
Like a previous example.
Yes. There are a large number of people who have very good intentions, but there's also a very small minority who don't. And so maybe that is what you're describing. I can now understand is that the OSG does not need a minimum because that has other implications, but the home sites themselves should not be subdivided. They should actually be part of a larger lot.
Yeah, the lot itself, the type of the lot, the size of the lot.
And maybe the rule should make that clear. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure how to do that, but it certainly could be done in such a way that every lot created in the OSG has to contain a home site, something like that. That's a standard. on page 38 suggests that at the bottom there, two further policy. And speak to the first one, I was just wondering how the different plan maintains the character and unity values for the areas that are already there. Are there provisions that do that?
Yes. The ones that spring from Rockland would be, and which would be direct relevant to those policies, would be the rules of 1802, the Indigenous Essential Developments, which is one which listed up the district restrictions and is sometimes wanted to do a multi-unit comprehensive type development. That was quite character of the nation that compromised that and then just the other area for some reason. Characteristics, then that could be the way in which you can manage those activities through a reference back to policy. And then the second one probably would be the density rule itself.
Sorry?
The density rule itself. So if somebody triggered the requirement for density type of density rule, then you've got some ability to be able to consider that character of that very areas. But sort of more broadly, if somebody comes in with any activity that sits beyond the infrastructure requirements for an activity contemplated under that activity exam. So if somebody came up with an industrial activity with an essential activity that would be discretionary, and then the council, community, would have an ability to reference that back to a policy for them to be able to think about that character and fit into that area.
That's fine, just clarifying, so what I understand is it's be used when considering new activities, that those new activities don't disrupt the existing character.
I mean, this is in response, to be honest, this is in response to some pretty powerful submissions from residents who appear to me to have a very strong identification of a particular character and standard of the municipal sense of point. And seem to be very concerned to see that they would change. And I think it's appropriate to look at that in a policy. And I guess it's different from the other part of the zone is that it is more established, and there are parts of the zone that are hot, going to emerge and create their own character. And my professional view is that, well, that's fine. In fact, it's perhaps desirable to have some diversification and differences in character in some other areas, that's cool, provided you're respecting the structure and components. But why not have something that represents the values of the people attached to that existing developed area?
So then turning to the second policy you proposed, how is that actually given effect in the proposed rules and provisions?
Well, I think when we talk about the intent generally, which goes on from that discussion we've seen before, that I think that, again, that people were applying for a consent and taking it down because they were breaching the medium density residential rule or breaching the density rule, then we don't know what that metamedicine is yet because it hasn't been created. We can get an idea of what it's like from the construction of the rules. But what I'm saying by putting that policy in is it may not be appropriate to benchmark metamedicine against what's at Jackson Point existing residential areas.
Well, the particular wording I'm looking at is that it says provide for the creation of a distinctive design aesthetic within new residential areas of the zone. How does the plan propose to do that?
Well, I think the structure plan does that in a way, recognising already that we talked about this before about the way in which open spaces manage, for example, is quite quite different between the Jack's Point areas and the in-house areas. So the Jack's Point areas have quite a different way in which they sort of in fact, you know, you can see through the just the quick instruction manual, sort of the walls go from the Jack's Point areas, which have a sort of create the open space around them. And that's a totally different approach, which is going to be something in the house instead of that. So I think it's just saying, well, there are things that are going to be different in the way that they're going to be. You can see those already happening, what's about to happen in terms of that area. And then there's other elements like the open space, or this action, as we noted before, was a further example of that, you know, that sort of comes down as part of the subdivision D process rather than as part of an activity area, which is what, you know, maybe the Jack's Point area is.
I'm just not sure that any of those really touch on design, providing a creative and distinctive design sphere. To me, that suggests some sort of identifiable design within a residential area which makes that one distinct from another. And that doesn't seem to hang on having a screen running through it or anything like that. I don't want to see policies go in that encourage people to expect things that aren't provided. That's what I'm really getting to. And the simple reading of that, I think, speaks rather more than his own office. And so, I can comment on that. There's a really trying to deliver a solution that isn't provided.
Yeah, I see that point. It's probably also mindful of the way in which building development is going to be delivered in the house is quite different. It's just about the subdivision rules. And there's a lot of assistant benefits of control put in for subdivision investments in 380 square meters. So it's quite a different approach that we've seen. But yeah, take the point that you don't want to necessarily throw the baby out with the bathwater. Maybe it needs to be some care given some of those orders.
That's a practical way to approach it, but I'm just wondering whether the plan should define a set proportion of reserves rather than leaving it open.
Yes, very good question.
Roading is straightforward. You have to provide roads a certain width so that becomes easy to calculate.
Yes.
Reserves as areas that people can just come off.
And I think this is a discussion on issues that the staff has raised before about the airplanes as well. And I guess the, we can talk about the current framework we have to the subdivision. The subdivision rules work in a way that there's discretion or control. At that time, you're given a certain permission, especially in the open space. And that is informed by the council's policy on financial development contributions that would require the developers to either pay for an equivalent value of 27.5 square meters of land equivalent, so that their financial implication reserves for items in our council meeting, for reserves somewhere in that neighbourhood, where there's some commission security. And as I understand the policy, it's at the council's discretion as to whether that thing is a city or state or it's cash. So there's that sort of regime which operates, if you like, us a little bit in the same place.
Yes.
And of course, there's a residual question, I think, when it comes to items and
yes.
much items around sufficient provision of open space in that case. You can see can't be the problems if you're going through a subdivision process and you create a development title or a bulk title, it's, you know, it's sold off to somebody else, but you can become a, have an expectation that they can go to in and self-develop those lots. And there's their physical ability to create the open space to go on, because they've got just their lot and their framework of 10,000 acres. So, I think that where that takes us in terms of the leasing rules is certainly yes, I think it's a red flag in my mind for some of those high entities with that partnership. But I think the key thing for me in terms of the difference in the high is that low entities stuff in terms of the most other areas where you've already got the open space that surrounds the whole pond.
Yes. So, I understand that you've got defined areas which are going to make
yeah.
open space.
Well, that template, the structure's been set.
Yes.
So, it's that there. The main office is another area, so.
Great. Whether we can solve that problem or not, although, Dr. Reed suggested, for instance, that the open space area be defined rather than left as discretion. If you see that as one way of ensuring that basically the minimum open space and no
fires. Yeah. Well, the other observation to make about that approach is that it deals with the utilities on the land.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a hatching, as in the case of the Hemingway's disease, the underlying utility is still the future.
Yeah.
So it's still an entitlement that people may have or think they should have.
That means the expectation of entitlement, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes, and that's the key difference, isn't it? Mm-hmm. What Dr. Reed is making was that the activity really doesn't have that, so you've got to take that away and put it in open space. But the spot needs to be, the open space would need to be set down as part of the structure plan. Here we go.
same paragraph when you said that there'll be absence of a consent granted for accomplished development plans from your discretion. Why not non-compliant? The problem with discretionary always is that you can do it, as Mr. Kimberly Bottomley says.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that doesn't change my mind. It probably wasn't a plan.
Maybe a scope issue.
I don't know what's going on with that reference to scope, but and I guess I start to think that the cable companies were discretionary, so bear in mind is that the discretionary service status was imposed in relation to non-compliance of the construction plan itself. So it seemed incongruous to have non-compliance of these plans from granted to the comprehensive development plan and not construction. But in any event, I still would consider that we would be capable of having an issue that goes through a discretionary activity to see the preference of the policies. That link the chapter 6 higher order ones to the reality of those areas in this town that are outstanding natural landscapes. More than what's in the policies now, I think. More than what's direction given in the policy.
Yes, I think.
So
would you prepared to draft something, I could do this next day. Get that for us and let's go. That's it. Paragraph 14.8, I think what we've ended up with is you referred to rules there, and I think what's happened is the rule numbers have changed as amendments have been made. But you're referring to the one about sale of liquor, I don't think that's what you intended. Is it just the matter that insertion of other rules has changed those numbers? That we can.
So I think 1.4.4 is correct, isn't it?
That's
the design of the sale litigation.
And then 4.4.4. I think sort of the 11. Yeah. The question I had about that one is whether it's actually an activity or a standard. But has to be met in respect of the activities in those areas.
Yeah, I think it would be standard.
So you can get it moved as the rule 41.5 somewhere.
Along with the likely vegetation.
which of the species were composed.
Can we make it clearer? I'm always worried that we leave things amorphous for consent planners.
Right, okay.
But they don't have the experience that you and I have this first, and they tend to read literally what they see. If your intention is that the mitigation is achieved once the plants are established, let's say that.
Right. I think it's probably also a combination of might not be just plants, you know, big plants in the contrary, that might give them,
yeah.
But maybe that could be part of the discussion.
Mm.
So lumps.
Asking questions on things that we can just change anyway.
Fair enough.
Well, where the wording is, could be improved, and it's not substantial. Particularly in terms of policies. Using your latest version from page 4110, is the Sayers Liquor rules and activity. I'm just unclear, does that apply in addition to the previous rule, which is 41491, which deals with commercial activities, so you end up being satisfied both.
speed. I would see the sale, like I say, I can actually sit it.
Mm.
But right around there. And I think you're going to have to be quite interesting to see how it grows.
Right. So it's not meant for excluding people, that's all those ones.
I don't think it's designed to.
Yeah.
I just can't think whether it would carry out from the old panel, whether it was going to be too cold.
Now, 41.4.12, structure plan facilitators. I wondered whether that is actually an activity rule or a standard that applies to the activities. But what it says is then, if you look at 41.4.12.1, the use of this area is critical to residential activities and that's a discretionary activity. That's not what you intend to take that.
I mean, it's the preliminary wording, which is the bit, I suppose, where you've got an in activity that's not provided for the list of activities below.
Mm.
As the list, so then it becomes the discretion, the discretionary activity. So the intention was to sort of list what can do, what can't be provided, and what's left out becomes subject to that wording of becoming a discretionary activity.
I know it, but I understand what you're saying. I'm just trying to make it sure that it's avoiding confusion, people looking at it fresh.
No, no, well, I can, you know, you can never see that happening in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the structure of the other approach might get into the, just an example, which is being used in that part.
Would it be, or would another option be to have a standard that sets out for each activity area the limitation on the activities that occur in that activity area? And then this rule could refer to that standard, so any activity which doesn't comply with standard X.
So then you have a whole list of new standards.
Well, it could just be the same thing that you have, just displaced into standards saying, you know, this, you know, the village area is restricted to, etc.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. Yes.
Mm. The other question I had in there is one of them, 12.7, which is the OSG. The wording of it says it's prescription to the development and operation of golf courses.
Yes.
And then it lists the matter that are included in that. I just wonder, since we're in mining, being what one would expect as a development and operation of a golf course.
Well, yeah, that's probably reflecting the historical situation, technically. But if you've got one of those maps that have got a burial in it, you can see in the OSG as a project of inquiry. And that's where they get the models out from.
But the point of the question is not to do with whether there's a quarry there. The point of the question is the wording is done in such a way that it may be that it should be open space golf use this area restricted to complaining of the existing quarry and the development and operation of the golf course.
Oh, rather than having a subsidy of the golf course, yes.
Yes, because it's not, yeah. That isn't a golf course, that's
it. It's not, no, it's, yeah. It's not part of golf course. No, I see your point. It would be a bit of a point. Yeah.
Okay. Now, in your intention of this rule, whether it's that 80% regeneration that is required or no more than 80% regeneration is allowed.
Yes.
I suspect the former was what the intention was, but my reading of it is the latter. The rules require. Standard seems to be that you should have at least 80% regeneration. Is that right? Is that what?
Well, I think it would be. That would be probably the easiest of the
time. That's another thing I'm not sure to look at. So the use of this area restricts to 12 low-level, low-impact residential units. What does low-level, low-impact mean?
I've been first of all, that the level of scrutiny in the grants and over the schools is that we carry through. It's not as important to be. They are literally carried out of the rules. And so, all I can say is that the interpretation doesn't really add to the rule of law because it gives too much way of discretion there. But perhaps it's the most important part of the number, I suspect, in the number of residential units.
Yes, the 12 residential units, yeah. And the other rules actually establish what they are.
Yeah, I mean, for it to be clear, the low impact mode, low level low impact, probably doesn't add to it. That's not really otherwise achieved through the standards.
The next one is also a little bit problematic. Understand, is it only the residence that has to be existing, or does it include other buildings? And when do they?
Well, I think if it's recognising activities associated with craft and farming activities and retail sales goods and produce, then I would have thought buildings associated with those would be
I mean, I haven't seen it, are there those buildings existing there at the moment?
The farm building in Craftsbury is the area that's around Homestead, which on the other side is the campus.
Sorry? So the existing at the date of the notification of the plan.
The farm homestead building is yes, but I've been there for a while, so I don't know what the nature is seems to those other related activities are. But I suspect they are envisaging the labour that it provides a additional buildings on top of what's there in relation to those other activities. But I'm not sure.
I'm pleased to say that I'm not the only one who couldn't really understand it.
Yeah.
Well, maybe our site visit will help us understand that.
Yes.
Ms. Jones might help you with some assistance in terms of trying to get it. We have the same in. Rule 14, where it talks about harvesting the existing forestry. The forestry existing as of the date of the notification that we should be aware of. Rule 414, forestry activities. If it wasn't existing as of August last year, I think we should delete the exception. And if it was, then we should identify that date as existing as of that date.
Yeah, I agree.
Go the other way, it's found in the standard which is an accident. It seems to me that it's saying planting of any of those trees is prohibited. The way it's written, though, that's only a prohibited activity if you don't comply with the standard. Probably copied from the operative plan.
I think it was probably because of the logic of growth to a plan, with the vegetation. So I think the logical fits here, and it's probably just a matter of learning with it, so that it gets to the right trigger.
Or be duplicated in the activity list.
Maybe
because the list is an activity and had an advice note here referring to the activity to make it clear. And then that could also refer to chapter 34, which covers the other wild increase. Within 1 consecutive 12-month period, is that what I'm just intended? Does that seem to imply that you can only do one lot of earthquakes ever? Or is it each 12-month period? I thought the intention was.
Get it right the first time.
Keep going until you get right. Yeah. And it's the same in the later one to do with filters in relation to water bodies, which is 4.5. In 41.5.12.5, I can see you've reinstated something that Ms. Jones is deleted, and it says at the very end, may exceed the maximum height stated in A above. Which A is it? The problem is that it's used A. Does it pay in the same rule? You might like to mention that to us as well, so you get the chance.
I would do.
Yes, that would help us. Here, I think it's translated from the opposite of the cane, which is related, where it's related to activities other than residential rather than funeral education.
If you want to screen the motion, your options, then I would be. Include it rather than leaving it as a obscure part of the rule. To me, it's
or is it, or should it just exclude residential activities from the rule? That's the thing, that's. See, you can't store equipment outside, so you can't have your drink and meat outside.
Yeah, it might be better to be prefaced by a non-residential
activity. Mm. Don't worry, we had the same problem with the residential zone. And there we also had some wood fires called mine. And you're not going to have that here because it doesn't have open fires. But yes, I mean, that's a rule that I think is putting it without even thinking about practical application of it.
So, you know, any non-residential activity that results from
that. Mm. Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe you'll just kind of agree on some wording with that.
Okay.
Trigger rule for state highway access here, which you had a bit of a go at. Now, basically, what the system you set up here is like having a trigger by a particular development within certain activity areas. A number of those are controlled activities. So, for example, if someone had an application for 12-unit medium density development, it's controlled activity that's got to be approved. And then the council might come back and say, well, this score the basic capital fact you need to develop the intersection of Watershed Road and State Highway. So obviously that couldn't work, because the question that comes down is who is going to do that work, who's going to pay for the design, the upgrading and such like. And I'm just wondering, I'm not sure how the best work is to basically perhaps have a rule that says there should be no development within specified activity areas until Watershed Road is section been upgraded to the standards set out. But the only difficulty with that is that we could possibly do it by having an appendix in the plan showing how to be upgraded. And that would provide a degree of certainty, but it would require RCL or Jackson entity or both to go and make the process of transit in New Zealand, get a design done. Traffic engineer will come back with eye water and fill to adopt that design and incorporate it in the plan, so that would provide certainty. But at the moment, I'm not sure that the rule draft here, the engine is good, but I don't think it would work. Because no one's going to want to be the one that restores the breaks the camel back. Because people are always going to be wanting to come in under and say, well, my development hasn't actually triggered the news to do that yet. And no one's going to be wanting to be the first guy who's going to be told, yes, it's your development that finally triggers the need to upgrade this intersection.
And it also has to and carry the entire cost of it.
Yep. Like if you're a preschool, for example, your development has to trigger it. You're not going to want to do that, obviously. Realistically, the only parties that are going to be able to do that are going to be RCL, Jack's Point, entities who are both working together. They're going to be able to quite realistically hope to shoulder the cost and burden of doing that. I would have thought.
Don't forget there's that other scope resources, separate submissions, even rezoning of the land across the other side of the road as well.
Yes, that's right. And they've said that we're concerned that, you know, that the safety of roads are adversely affected, etc., by the development. The other issue that sort of relates to that is I know that RCL have got that consent under 160562, the middle one if you like, but there's no, it's really open to them as to when they might get around to actually building it.
Well, that's right, you know, absolutely. I mean, they've got a consent which entitles them to develop the access, and it doesn't exist for them now. And I don't think there's a good idea of that process, so I can't say when it might happen. Other than that, I guess the rules recognising that the access can be developed as either through the RCL access or through the road. But the presumption of this, I suppose, is that those additional activities will naturally go through the RCL access. This is really dealing with the extra stuff that's over and above the RCL access that's required in the terms of the Watershed Road access. But this is sort of, this is implicitly recognising that that one's going to go first, and that is a limitation. But, you know, if that doesn't happen,
it might help to remember that as notified, the trigger of, I think it was notified as 300 residential units and submitted to 300 and 1, anyway, the trigger was specifically in reference to development in the RHD and RSH areas.
Yeah.
So that was the sort of starting point, the focus of use in the development that was trying to be managed. The redrafting is trying to keep that concept, yeah, the trigger is in the RHD and RSH areas, but in a way that, you know, the additional access to the modelling that was done is kind of relevant to a different way of capturing that somehow.
Yeah, and I fully acknowledge that it's famously difficult to have a trigger for these sort of works. Mm.
Is it that that's the range of activities that are applied to this, the issue of the three that's on the subdivision, or that it needs to apply because it's the subdivision of land and the subsequent use of that land which is actually going to cause the demand, rather than being until after subdivision and then it's the activity is going to be.
Well, I think it sounds with the majority of potential developers going to be permitted. Subdivision permitters have certainly the best way to deal with that because of the precursor. So, that's a hard agree.
And even there's no really list there on the unit type of subdivision. There's going to be a subdivision consent somewhere. I doubt that they're going to read it all out.
No, well, yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, some of it's likely to happen. It's likely to be in respect of the development of rollout and potential areas that would be the most likely prospect that I will just, you know, turn it off the potential other activities that might keep you there at the time.
Because the other potential activity that might keep you there is a hospital.
Well, that's right, or, you know, something
in the village,
tertiary education students and thing, you know.
Precisely. Hence my earlier question was the state of government. The activities that we moved from the EIC to the village are also things that might potentially trigger it. But it seems to me the logical area to attach anything would be a subdivision consent rather than a managed consent.